Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, episode 42 of season 2. It's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet, and I'm David Todd from The Hammer Speaks. Dave, the Steelers come away with a 24-17 win over the Cincinnati Bengals. It looked like they were going to roll early. Things got a little tighter in the second and third quarters. But unlike some games in recent memory, the Steelers were able to put this one away without too much heartache and nail-biting, although it took an interception late in the game. What are your thoughts?
First of all, as the AFC North turns, what a day it was for Steeler Nation. Not only did the Steelers win, we talked about the possibility of the Ravens laying eggs this year. They played great when they played the Steelers, but I don't want to take anything away from the Steelers' win, but even more important was the Ravens going out west to Seattle and laying an egg and losing out there. So now the Steelers are they get their first AFC North win of the season, and they are now technically in first place by a half a game right now, but really they still need a Ravens loss, and it makes this bye week now real interesting with the Bengals taking on the Ravens next week, and we all get to sit on the sideline and watch that one.
Yep, that'll be fun to see. definitely the must-watch game for Steeler fans. Let's before we get into it, the injury report seemed like it was pretty clean. Obviously, we'll get more news tomorrow at noon. But maybe a couple guys a little dinged up. Ryan Clark, Max Starks went out for a few plays. Anything else of note?
No, and I don't think Tomlin holds a Tuesday press conference on the bye week.
All right.
So it'll probably be a week from tomorrow before we hear for sure. But from what I gather, it was just Clark with that shoulder and Max Starks with the stinger. I'm holding out hope for Lamar Woodley and Emmanuel Sanders' return against the Chiefs. But, realistically, especially with it being announced today that Tyler Palco might start instead of the injured Matt Castle, I say why rush those guys back right now? They play the Bengals after that. Overall, yeah, we're looking real good on the injury report right now. Probably the healthiest we've been since the start of the season.
And we talked about this a month ago, said, look, if the Steelers can get through these games and get pretty healthy, and if they can be 7-3 or 8-2, they'll be in awfully good shape going down the stretch. Now, obviously, life would be, wine and roses, and Mike Tomlin's boys would be drinking the wine now if they had won that Ravens game and sat here at 8-2, because they'd be clearly not only in control of the division, but in control of the AFC. Didn't happen, but generally in good shape. As you say, going into the bye, we'll see if Sanders and Woodley get healthy. And as you noted, looks like Matt Castle has a significant hand injury. Tyler Palco is going to get the start this Sunday against New England. It sounds like he will obviously then get the start the following Sunday when the Steelers go to Kansas City. And the other piece of news that just broke is Job has a significant quote-unquote foot injury. Now, saying significant to me means a guy could miss 4 to 6 weeks. They're talking about Castle possibly missing the rest of the season. And that's significant because, as we talked about on Friday, Houston's looked as good as any team in the AFC. They put an absolute pasting on Tampa in Tampa yesterday. And, the Steelers, when they're thinking about home field advantage maybe for the whole shebang in the AFC, well, that's another thing that breaks the Steelers' way, pun intended.
Yeah, Matt Schaub, the thing about it is the Texans, I think, are still going to be good enough, even with Matt Leinart at quarterback. And let's face it, they should be getting Andre Johnson back. They've done all this damage. I've been really promoting the Texans on Twitter, how dangerous a team they are right now. This injury will hurt them, but the way they're able to run the football and all, I think they're going to be fine. I still don't think it would really take a monumental collapse for them not to win the South. But they could have a couple losses in here, and as you said, it could affect home field advantage. But right now, you look at that game last night, for example, between the Patriots and the Jets, trying to decipher which team you need to root for and all like that. There is a long way to go in this thing, and it's so hard to, you know, basically what I guess I'm trying to say is just win is all you need to worry about right now. Let the rest take care of itself. And like I said, the Ravens, gave us a needed help yesterday losing to the Seahawks, and the Steelers have really things stacked in their favor right now heading forward. So, you know, just win and don't worry about anything else right now.
Exactly. Well, let's get into the game on Sunday. Steelers go to Cincinnati, as you mentioned, 0-2 in the division. We Ed Bouchette characterized it as a better win game, and I think that was a good characterization. And things couldn't have started better. The Bengals go 3-and-out. We'll get in. The Bengals go 3-and-out. Score a touchdown, the Bengals go 3-and-out, score a touchdown, it's 14-0. Boy, did it look good early.
Yeah, and let's not overstate, let's not forget some of those things in those 3-and-outs of the Bengals right off the top, with William Gay, a couple of nice pass breakups in there, and immediately off the top, you could see that he had put the game against the Ravens behind him. We've seen the Steelers defer, recently, and outside of, I guess, the Patriots game, not get those 3-and-outs, and that's exactly what Tomlin was after. Not only do you get the 3-and-out, but now because you deferred, you're going to get the ball in the second half, and what a great start. The Steelers marched right down the field on their first possession there with Roethlisberger. I really like the use of the bubble screens. I like the use of the end arounds there, because let's face it, the Bengals really have a good run front the way they stack those linebackers. On top of everything, you knew it was probably going to be tough running in this game anyway. And I just like the way the play calling was. Roethlisberger on the third down and 10 from the Bengals 16. That is vintage Ben Roethlisberger. That's Ben doing what Ben does. Great step up, great pump fake to avoid the two pass rushers. Get over to the right side of the field outside the pocket and let the ball loose before both feet over the line of scrimmage to Jericho Cotchery, a guy that I've been saying, the last few weeks here, I think is about time to step up. And, boy, he did. And right off the bat there, you got a long drive, 7-0 Steelers. And then, of course, the next 3-and-out call, the Steelers took over again. Another nice drive down the field. They finished this one with a Rashard Mendenhall 2-yard touchdown. Some great passes by Roethlisberger on that drive as well.
Yeah, no question. All the things you hit on about the play calling, I liked it as well. Make sure those linebackers had to move side to side, getting the ball in Wallace's hands early. That also means, the DBs have to make decisions about how they're going to play him the rest of the game. If they're running bubble screens to him, you don't want off him too much, but if you're going to play some press coverage, then you can run some go patterns later in the game. So I thought that was good stuff. And also on the end of rounds, just trying to slow down that pursuit a little bit. So really liked it. I was absolutely convinced watching it on TV that Roethlisberger was over the line, but clear at the end of the day that he wasn't. And, a really nice play by Ben, and clearly he was psyched to get that done. The second drive, the play that stood out to me, there are a couple plays in there. There was only one third down play, and Ben hit Heath Miller right down by the goal line. And I'll tell you, that wasn't as vicious a shot as he took last year against the Ravens when I thought he might actually be dead. But the way his head snapped back, I've watched the hit a bunch of times now. I'm not 100% convinced it was a head-to-head penalty, but I'm absolutely shocked that they didn't call something on the play there. It wouldn't have mattered in terms of yardage for the Steelers. It would have moved the ball 1 yard forward from the two, but I was really surprised that Heath Miller got up from that. That was an incredible catch that he was able to hold on to the ball, and then Mendenhall pounding it home, and 14-0 at that point in the game started the second quarter? Was that still the first quarter? Yeah, it was still the first quarter at that point.
Yeah, and real quick on the Heath Miller catch and hit there, I've got video of that, and I broke it down frame by frame. It's real hard to see, but it does look like he led with his shoulder on there. It was a violent, violent hit. It's really so hard to get a good steel shot from this. But, it wasn't much different than the hit Ryan Clark had on Ed Dixon last week, if you ask me. I don't see how you're talking about a matter of inches. And in fact, if Miller lowers his head just a little bit like Dixon did last week, you know, or does that draw at that point? Does it draw a flag? I mean, I guess I'm not so mad that the flag wasn't thrown. It's just the inconsistencies. I can only imagine how hard it is on these players to differentiate what's legal and what's not legal. It'll be interesting to see if there's a fine handed out from this, but because there's no flag and because it looked like the shoulder was led with almost like Ryan Clark did, I doubt there's going to be a fine here, but it was as violent of a hit as we've seen in a while, and a car crash like.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, then Mendenhall goes in. Nice to see the Steelers be able to pound the ball in on a first down from the two. You've seen two drives there, and at that point in the game, you're definitely thinking, look, you stop the Bengals on this next drive, and you can really put them out of the game here, or as close to, as any team in the NFL can be out of a game in the second quarter if you can put some more points on the board. And the Bengals had two plays in this next drive. They threw a pass to Artrell Hawkins, or whatever Hawkins' first name is, for 25 yards. Kind of Andy Dalton was rolling right and kind of threw it up to the left side. It was a good throw. It was a good catch. I was a little surprised that he was able to complete that ball. And then the second and eight pass down the middle of the field, both safeties, Ryan Clark and Troy Polamalu there. That was one of the but it was a ridiculous defensive play by the Steelers. It looked to me like Troy thought Ryan Clark was going to catch the ball. He looked at Ryan Clark. He looked back at the ball and then did nothing. Clark got his back turned on the play, didn't jump at the right time. Scott comes down with the ball. A.J. Green comes down with the ball, basically a 36-yard Hail Mary for a touchdown. You just have to move on. But I have no idea, and I haven't heard either Ryan Clark or Troy Polamalu comment on the play. Have you heard what they've said about it?
No, I have not, but you described it right on because, you look at this thing 50 times, and it looks like Troy let up because he thought maybe – Clark had it, and Clark's trying to do an over-the-shoulder catch almost, Willie Mays style. It was almost like they didn't even think a receiver was back there, like all they had to do is just make the catch. And with a guy like Green, I mean, and this was, it was like a Hail Mary. I mean, they're giving up the height that it is as it is, and Green by far is going to have the better vertical than both Clark and Polamalu. Neither one of these guys made an attempt to elevate on the play. And
the ball was underthrown.
Yeah, and it's an easy knockdown at the very least. I mean, forget the interception, but this is a touchdown that should never, never happen. And now we've seen 2 weeks in a row, especially when Clark's been involved, you got to kind of wonder what's going on back there. Now, Clark did have some nice play, sporadic, especially helping to run during the game, but these type things have got to stop, especially on a stupid 36-yard Hail Mary like that, and it instantly let the Bengals right back into the game, whereas really they probably should have settled at best for a field goal there on that drive, and they still be down 14-3. So yeah, I was disappointed with that play too.
And I, Dave, I'll tell you, and I've talked about this repeatedly this year. Saw it a lot last year. Ed wrote about the drives against Steeler deep plate. I think it's very simple. I think my assessment is, look, we saw the best of Troy yesterday in the job he does down in the box, stopping the run, coming around the edge, tackling runners from behind, a little short pass out in the flat where, as you described it, he gave the guy a helicopter ride, which was an apt description. Nobody's better in the game than Troy at doing that. But Troy is not great in pass coverage, and Ryan Clark, I think, is a liability in pass coverage. So our safeties, because Ryan Clark lacks that speed, that breakout speed, he can hit ferociously when guys are set up. But, as you say, it's an issue. And while the corner play has been better than we probably thought it would be at the beginning of the year with a couple, games of exception, the pass coverage by the safeties, I really think, has not been good this year.
I think they're doing a better job of moving. Troy really anticipates a lot. His game is a lot of gut instinct, film study, tendencies, and and focusing in on the quarterback. And, you know, we've seen him get moved a little bit with his eyes because he is gambling so much. And I think that's what you kind of get with him more so this year. I mean, hey, the guy's healthy. The guy's moving around, breaking on the balls faster than ever. I just think, he gambles a little bit and or gambles a lot. And we're just seeing him guess wrong more as of late than we are guessing right. Now, there's no...
And the problem is, I guess what I was trying to point out is that's exactly right. And Ryan Clark doesn't have speed to make up if Troy's wrong. And, you know, with the other guys, you know, the other guys are mostly average guys back there. And Ike Taylor's playing a lot of man coverage. So, yeah, in the passing game, when you make those mistakes, you can get beat off badly.
Yeah, it's definitely... Safety play definitely is something we need to look at. I mean, we saw it... really a lot, in the Ravens game last week. They're getting beat down the seam, too. We've seen Troy, get beat down the seam on some of these seam routes as well, too. But, Dalton still didn't have a huge game. Now you got to look at what their game plan was coming into this. They wanted him to get rid of the ball quick. They wanted him, if he felt pressure, to get out of the pocket. He only went, 15 of 30? Or I know he had 30 attempts on the day.
Yeah, I'll give you his final number.
15 of 30. Yeah, 170. He had the two touchdowns. He also had the two interceptions in the fourth quarter, or third and fourth quarter, which were huge there. He had a couple of big plays in there, and that's something, the Steelers pride themselves on not giving up the big play. One thing that I like that they did on defense, they showed some man early, man coverage early, and then went into more zone looks and all like that to kind of confuse him, mix in those blitzes. But they just weren't able to get after Dalton. The safety play, I'll put it to you this way, we need to watch it further, but it's not like I'm sure the coaches don't see this and it not showing up on their end. I think it mostly has to do with both Clark and Polamalu guessing quite a bit and guessing wrong.
Yep. The Steelers' next drive, obviously, these things happen. You know, it goes down in the books as an interception for Ben, obviously bounces off Heath Miller's chest. You know, he feels terrible about it. But, again, it looked like, the Steelers started out in that drive, got Mike Wallace for 13 yards, and then an incompletion deep to Mike Wallace, which I think we both agree. We like seeing him take shots now and then. They did it a couple times. I'm sure the weather conditions impacted the thought process behind that and the throws a little bit. But, when Heath Miller – drops a ball like that, you just kind of move on. I mean, he doesn't drop many balls, and he catches some that he probably shouldn't catch. And a good play by Leon Hall, who, unfortunately for the Bengals, is now out for the season with a torn Achilles tendon.
Yeah, he did make he could have easily given up on that play. Hall could have. And, you makes you wonder how much of that hit was still ringing in Miller's head, because that's a ball that he just never lets loose like that. And the way it kind of bounced up, it was like the perfect storm right there. And then at that point, you're thinking, oh, Lord, here we go. Going to let him right back in the game on a short field here. But luckily the Steelers defense held him to the 3 points there on Nugent 43-yard field goal. And Steelers up 14-10 at that point, a game that they had really dominated up to that point.
Yeah, and exactly. And, kind of change of possession, and then the Steelers have the long drive from their own 13, where I think the thing that I really liked about this drive, and I know you wrote about it and pointed out the good stuff Antonio Brown did, and I think you also pointed out on Twitter that Antonio Brown has, in the last four games, more catches than any receiver in the NFL. That's right, right?
Yeah, Del Lally brought that to our attention. I went ahead and pulled some stats on that real quick. Antonio Brown, over the last four games, and remember, this was right after I called out Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders and Ben Roethlisberger after the Jacksonville game, because all the completion percentages to those guys were in the 40% range. Well, since that time, Antonio Brown has been targeted 40 times, has 26 receptions, which is a 65% completion ratio for 364 yards. He has the most completions most receptions by anybody over the last 4 week span. He's averaging 14 yards per catch and a 9.1 yards per target. Another interesting thing that probably sticks out even better than that is 22 of those 26 catches have produced either a first down, and of course the one touchdown. touchdown that goes along with it. So 22 of those catches, of those 26 catches, have been money, and there's not a guy that hasn't been on more fire right now. And it really showed in that drive that you're talking about right before the half, where the Steelers faced several third down situations there. There were, I think Brown had four catches for 70-something yards on this drive, two of them on third down. And this is, you know, when Mike Wallace gets that attention that he's been getting over the last week, Antonio Brown has had to step up and make plays, and boy, howdy, has he ever.
Yeah, and, two things kind of stood out in this drive. As you mentioned, the Steelers converted three third downs in the drive. You saw that, and then for the first time, and something that was the theme the rest of the game, the Bengals really started to get pressure on Roethlisberger. And in fact, they got back-to-back sacks early in the drive that set the Steelers up for a third and 19. And Antonio Brown, I think for the fourth game in a row, has made a catch that really made you go, wow. A ball that he had to go up for. He actually tipped it up and caught it again as he turned. The third and 19, a 21-yard gain. He is continuing to make the hard catches. One thing is, you talked about we've seen drops, and every receiver is going to have some drops, but I'm not sure I remember Antonio Brown dropping a ball this year, certainly not in these last four games. And, those include these kind of circus catches on the sidelines and over the middle. And clearly he and Ben were on the same page as he threw him some back shoulder balls, got him some balls out in space, went down the field. And we saw the Steelers have a touchdown called back as Ben, not exactly like the first touchdown, but in a play where he rolled again to his right and moved forward, Cotry was able to break free and get behind his coverage. But it wasn't the way the play was designed. I think it was designed to be a quick hitter behind Heath, and Heath was downfield and engaged with his guy before the throw was made. So I think the refs probably made the right call, even though it wasn't a lot of contact by Heath. But the touchdown nullified by Cotry, and the Steelers end up kicking a field goal when Ben gets sacked again. Sushi hit a 39-yarder. But so we saw the pressure, three sacks on that drive, but the Steelers were still able to put points on the board. Antonio Brown being the feature guy. The other thing that stood out to me is all of a sudden, we've only seen Hines Ward get one catch, and he did a good job on the ball he got on a bubble screen, getting 10 yards, and it didn't look like he would get five. But he didn't, you didn't see him on the field. And with Manny Sanders out, that was surprising to me.
Yeah, you know what? I was surprised that they didn't elevate Tyler Grisham for this game as well, too. Hey, but let's be honest here. Hines has been beat up ever since the Arizona game. He had the ankle injury. He came back and played against the Patriots there. Then he gets knocked out last week. I think these injuries have taken a toll on him, and he didn't look like he was moving well. I think I heard on the broadcast as well from Tunch, on a radio broadcast. I like to listen to that while I watch the games, that they had extra tape on his ankle and all like that. I think this is a byproduct of him not being 100% right now, and them wanting to make sure they get these other pieces, implemented in, especially Jericho Cotchery, to help out here. But yeah, I mean, he did not look good, did not look like he moved well during the plays that he was on the field. I don't have the snap breakdown yet up from that game, but it couldn't be many in that game from my eyes, what I've seen going back through the game there. You're right on the pass interference call on Heath Miller. He was engaged. That's a tough call to make. It wasn't like he was he was engaged, and that's the rule. You can't block before the pass leaves the quarterback's hand. So that was a tough call there. I do think that play was designed to go elsewhere initially, and you hit on the three sacks as well. Ben, you're going to get those when Ben holds the ball a little bit. A lot of it's, some of it had to do with the offensive line. I'll have my offensive line breakdown later in the week to get a better idea there. But, the key is that they converted on third downs on that drive, and sure, you want seven out of there, but they had to settle for three, and that was a nice, the Bengals had to really feel good at that point, only giving up three before the half.
Yep, and now I'm going to be a little bit critical of Tomlin here in how he handled the last 58 seconds with Bengals getting the ball. Cincinnati is in a situation with a rookie quarterback down 17-10, and Sushi kicks it in the end zone. There's 58 seconds left, and they take a shot on first down where the Steelers get some pressure, and Dalton has to throw the ball away. And, the play takes 6 or 7 seconds at most. And so the Steelers are in a situation where it's 2nd and 10 for the Bengals on their own 20. Mike Tomlin has confidence in his defense against Baltimore last week with 2:38 or more than 2 minutes left that they're not going to go 90 yards. And in this situation, the Bengals run a playoff left tackle. They get 4 yards. It's third and six from the 24. There could be 45 seconds left. If the argument is you're worried that the Bengals will then convert and then have time to run a couple plays and get in field goal range, you're talking about the Bengals gaining, 45 yards from there in 40 seconds. I'm not buying that at all. You use the time out there. You have 45 seconds. If the Bengals want to run the ball again, you're going to have at least 35 seconds left. You'll have at least one timeout. You have Antonio Brown returning the kick, the punt. You have a chance for, obviously, you can put a punt block on. You can do a lot of different things. With Ben in 35 yards, in a 7-point game, I think you have to be aggressive there. And I didn't understand it at all. I was mad as hell. I was screaming at the television for them to be calling timeout. And we saw the Steelers give up a field goal to the Ravens at the end of the first half last week that turned out to be, crucial in the result of the game and how the game was played. And I just think, we talk about doing things and making good decisions. I think it was a terrible decision by the coaching staff there not to be taking a timeout and put the rookie quarterback under some pressure and make Marvin Lewis make a decision on what he wanted to do there.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I forgot to add that in my notes as well, too. But, yeah, you're talking about taking a timeout after Brian Leonard goes off left tackle for 4 yards, and you're looking at that time at, about 46 seconds. They'll be faced with a 3rd and 6, and do they – if they pass there and stop the clock – the Steelers did take a timeout, after the Brian Leonard second run, which that made no sense. You're making a timeout with 7 seconds left, and you knew he's going to kick it out of the bounds probably at that point. But, yeah, I'm with you, and I definitely see your side of it. If you stop the clock there, you're probably going to make them punt with, 35, 40 seconds maybe on the clock, something like that, depending on what they did on that third down there. And, you give your offense one chance, maybe two plays or so, and you give Antonio Brown a chance to maybe make a return.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is just to look at the other side at it, F- for Andy Dalton on how he managed the clock, knowing that at that point you're going to run the ball, which was their call. He snapped the ball with about 9 seconds left on the play clock. He could have taken the game clock down to about 2 seconds and made it so that they didn't have to punt. Terrible clock management on his part, snapping it with, going up to the line and snapping it with about 9 seconds left as the clock is running. I think everybody screwed it up all around. And it ends up nothing happens, obviously. And I'm sure Tomlin was also thinking, we get the ball to start the half and whatever. That's all irrelevant to me. It's how you manage the situation at the time. So anyway, the Steelers get the ball to start the half. And like we've seen a lot with the Steelers this year, they seem to go in waves of being really effective offensively and then somewhat ineffective offensively. And coming out in the second half, we didn't see the best the Steelers had to offer as they went three plays, and Kapanos actually got off in a very nice 57-yard punt. But right back at the Bengals, the next thing you know, we're in a tie game.
Yeah, when they drove down there, now the 3-and-out, that's exactly not what you want. That's not why you deferred to the second half for sure. That pass, incomplete pass to Wallace in there, you had Roethlisberger was sacked, in that opening drive as well. Not a great start there, that's for sure. When the Bengals came back down there, for their drive and touchdown, you had the one pass to the backup tight end Cockart, I think, and they just were a little bit lax on defense as well too. And then you had the personal foul on Lawrence Timmons, which it'll be interesting to see if he gets fined for that. I don't think it was as bad as some of the other things we've seen around the league, but I'm tired of guessing it at who's going to get fined and who's not now. But they really ran a nice play there at 2nd and 1 on the Steelers 1-yard line with the 21 personnel package with with the fullback in the game, and Gresham, the tight end, of course, Gresham just ran away from Larry Foote. The fullback did a good job of keeping his route to the left kind of flat to keep Timmons, out of the end zone there and helping up underneath there. And the running back, Cedric Benson, did a great job kind of at least getting a shoulder or clipping James Harris coming off the edge. So many things that had to go right on that play. It really made me jealous. It was a really nice touchdown. And I noted in my notes that, I wish the Steelers would use that exact same play a little bit more, because they have the personnel in Heath Miller and David Johnson lining up at fullback, and of course, Rashard Mendenhall to pick up, someone coming off the edge to do that same type thing. So I was a little bit jealous there. And then all of a sudden, we've got a tie ball game, 17-17, real early in the second half.
And I'll tell you, Dave, this is when I started kind of losing my mind a little bit. You saw this game, and you knew what the Bengals are going to do. You pointed it out a couple times. I know you've written about it. Andy Dalton, look, he took a long shot with A.J. Green, and they got a touchdown on it. But Andy Dalton wasn't really good back there throwing the ball down the field. He was throwing 7-yard slants, curls, little in routes. Everything was designed to pretty much get the ball out of his hands on a 3-to-5-step drop in 3 seconds or shorter. It was clear as day that this is what's going on, and this is the drive that set it up, and it was effective, and they kept going to it and kept going to it and kept going to it the rest of the game. And look, William Gay made a nice play to jump it at the end to, seal the victory, but it was distressing for me to watch these guys play 9 to 11 yards off the receivers when they weren't playing press coverage, which wasn't very often, and have these guys just run these little slants, and Dalton was hitting them all the time. And much to the Bengals' credit, the Steelers weren't getting a lot of pressure because he was getting rid of the ball quickly. They were related, obviously. But I was disappointed in the Steelers' lack of defensive adjustments as we went along here, that Dalton was able to have this kind of a drive when everything was kind of the same type of stuff.
Well, would you rather them play more man press in that situation, or
I think you play. You just don't have to play soft. I don't think you have to play press coverage on them. But if you're gonna play it, there was a drag route where a guy ran right behind Ike Taylor. He didn't get any contact. If you're gonna press a guy on the line, try to get your hands on him on the line. I mean, we've seen now a bunch of times with Anquan Boldin last week, where the whole point of playing press coverage there is so you get your hands on him, he can't get into his route easily, and that disrupts their play a little bit. But the other thing is, if you're going to play kind of the softer coverage and let guys, knowing that you're going to let guys run in front of you, I understand this defense for years has been predicated on not giving up the big play and playing that way, but they've got to do something on that. And look, they showed they were able to do it later in the game. The guys made some good plays. I just think you got to be able to jump routes and be able to do stuff like that unless the other team shows you they can do something differently, or until, you just can't let them go down the field as they did a lot in the second half, basically running the same play every time.
Well, we've seen in the past with these zone, with these zone cover three type coverages and all that, before heading into this year, though, that, if it's not a good quarterback, they make young quarterbacks be inexperienced quarterbacks, be accurate, make them be patient, and make them try to force the ball. They know they're going to give up the 6 or 7 yards if a quarterback's patient. That's why when they face the guys like the Mannings, the Tom Brady's, the Aaron Rodgers, the Drew Brees, they're patient enough to keep making those plays without telegraphing it in there. And that's what LeBeau was betting on this, is, hey, yeah, I'm going to bet that sooner or later you're going to stare one of these down and not be patient, and we're going to get the turnover here. Against a better quarterback, you can't do that. And we've seen that with the Dime instituted this year with more of the man press coverage, and you're going to see that at different points in the year, and you're going to see it flip-flop between zone and press throughout the rest of the year as well, because they got the personnel to do it with now. So, and I think this plays a little bit into the Troy Polamalu thing too, because when you have more of a zone type coverage, you're able to, let him kind of freelance, underneath and break on some balls instead of being stuck just playing maybe like a cover two and helping up over the top all the time. So I see where you're coming from, David, but it's a double-edged sword that works both ways, especially against younger, inexperienced quarterbacks that might struggle with some accuracy.
Right, although I didn't see that from Dalton, and we really haven't seen that.
Oh, he's going to be he's going to, you know, I knocked on him quite a bit, you know, going into this game. We've seen this with Colt McCoy when his start last year as well, too. I'm surprised McCoy's struggling as much as he is this year. Dalton has the skills. I'll give the Bengals this. You know, I think he's going to be a good quarterback, but at the same time, he's not going to be able to live and die off these 6 yard passes all the time and come out of games with 5 and 6 yards per attempt. I mean, stats show us that you know, just doesn't cut it and all. So I think LeBeau just rolled the dice on this, said, hey, sooner or later, we're going to force this kid into a mistake.
Yep. Yep.
But I mean, I see where you're coming from though.
Yeah. Yeah. The Bengals, so a 17-17 game. And the great thing about this Steeler team, as we've seen so often this year, is they answered right back. You know, they took a drive where they went 76 yards, a very efficient drive, never had a third down to convert, moved the ball down the field. They did get sacked again, and he had gotten sacked in the previous drive, and that added up to their 5 sacks. But Mendenhall, with a really nice effort for a 9-yard touchdown run, and some good blocks because the hole was there eventually, and he got there. But nice to see Rashard Mendenhall kind of break some tackles near the goal line. And you know, that I don't know what the longest rushing touchdown the Steelers have this year, but that's the longest one that comes to mind for me.
I'm trying to remember too. Seemed like they have. I'll have to double check. I can't right off the top of my head remember what that is. But yeah, and I broke down the play on the touchdown. That's our old friend, the counter pike play. This time with Heath Miller and lined up on the other side there, on the left side there. And the blocking really wasn't all that fantastic by Marcus Gilbert and Ramon Foster. The guy fought off of the Foster block, and Gilbert kind of let his man back in to play as well there. But Kimo Otto did a great job on the pull, crushing out on his side. Heath Miller did a great job leading into the hole there. The crease wasn't that big in there, and Rashard had to break a good arm tackle there and keep his balance as well. And that's something that we really haven't seen from Rashard that terribly much, especially down in the red zone type situation like this. So I agree, that was a great run for Rashard. And they, and even they, going back to his first touchdown drive, a touchdown run in the game, that wasn't a big hole too. In fact, Kimo Otto got pushed off the ball initially. He went ahead and ran right up Kimo's ass and helped push him back forward for Kimo to end up getting the better of Sims on that play as well, too. You can tell that there's obviously been some coaching going on here, that Mendenhall's told him to, hey, just run up the backs of these guys if you have to. And I think he's benefiting it from it a little bit more. He's not as apt to, because I think he would have just as easily bounced that counter pike play outside previously, even though there was just a small crease there that he could work with. But that was a great run, a great finish to a drive that I think that was 11 plays, 81 yards on that drive there, and it was a great answer.
Yeah, the I think I had it as 76 yards, but maybe that didn't include the penalty yardage. Dave, then summarize basically how the rest of the game went with no scoring. Is the Steelers went 3 and out 3 consecutive times on some not very creative play calling. The Bengals moved the ball a little bit, but turned it over twice finally. Steelers finally got some turnovers at big points, William Gay being the guy who really caused both interceptions, knocking the first ball away, and Lawrence Timmons got it, and then making the interception himself late in the game, and the Steelers did a nice job on their very last drive to run out the clock. But what are your thoughts on the 3 drives preceding that, where basically it was run, run, pass, and the Steelers weren't able to do anything?
Well, you've got, you know, that we've seen them not, well, I think we talked about this the other day, about them not being able to put together a good drive when they need to, like a real time-killing clock by running the ball. And I put, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, are you really going to pass 3 times in this situation and stop the clock, I guess? The Bengals had 9 guys down in the box in these situations, or at least 9 guys down right within the hash marks there. you know, protecting against the run. They knew that we wanted to run. And let's face it, their run defense is good. I just don't know, you know, if they pass in that situation and throw an incomplete pass a couple of times and go three out, people are just as angry here. So,
well, you know, my only problem with it is, you know, it started with 14, first drive was with 14 minutes left and the second drive is with 12 minutes left. I mean, you know, if you're worried about running 40 seconds off the clock each time there, I think you just got to play the football game like you play the football game, and what got you there and what got you there is mixing it up and play action and hitting your receivers and run pass. I mean, I guess on one of them they did go short middle to David Johnson, and then Mendenhall got stuffed and he threw an incompletion to Wallace that he dropped. So that was with 12 minutes left. Wallace should have caught it. So on that drive, you know, I got no problems with how they called that play calling. You know, the other two were run pass, and I, you know, I just
well, well, let, know, let, hey, let, 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 let me ask you this on the third and 12. Okay. Their first drive, you know, 14 minutes of the fourth quarter. Let me ask you this on the third and 12 situation there. Did you not like them taking the deep shot, deep to Wallace?
Loved it.
Okay.
Loved it.
You know, the conventional thing to do is try to use, you know, go with something short there, to pick up the first down from your own, you know, from being backed up in your own end zone, to be more conservative in that situation. And that's the way the Bengals defense was playing that play. Now, of course, with the wind conditions, we don't know how bad it was. It looked like the ball did get blown a little bit off course there, but Wallace did have, you know, have his man beat there.
Oh, he did. He had him by two steps.
You know, if you complete that, everybody's all hell, you know, everybody's fine with it then. But the moment that it falls incomplete and it's fourth down early in the fourth quarter and you're giving up field position there, then everybody has a problem with it. So, I mean, I didn't have a problem with him going deep in that situation, because it's the least thing that they expected at the time. And it's third and 12. I mean, how many plays in? I mean, I know they had done good converting some previous third downs in that situation, but you had to know that they were protecting everything up underneath there.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that play calling. I think we saw I guess the question is, as we kind of step back from the game and look at it now, we spent a lot of time kind of going through the play by play here, which we generally do less of. But if you're going to analyze the play, I saw something you wrote, and I couldn't agree more, is that neither Steelers, let me put this in perspective. Steelers got a good road win here. They were a 4-point favorite. They won by a touchdown. They were never behind. The Bengals never had the ball in a position to take the lead other than the opening drive of the game. So a lot of good things there. But if you're going to point to things that, you know, our job is to, you know, talk about what, you know, some of the bad things, and some of the bad things were line play on both sides was not particularly good yesterday.
Yeah, it wasn't. Jason Worlds, he was okay as far as the outside linebacker spot goes. Ziggy Hood, Casey Hampton was blown off the ball a few times. I thought Kiesel played all right, really. I mean, I'm going to have to – it's one of those things I'm going to pay more attention to the defensive line next time through the tape there. But, you know, on the flip side, though, too, the Steelers only allowed like something like in that post I wrote 60-something yards on like 20 carries up until the Bengals' last two drives. You know, where they really got 44 yards, I think, on like six carries during their last two drives there. The offensive line was not consistent.
Well, Dave, how about, I mean, if the last two drives the score was 38-7, I'd say discount them. But in a 24-17 game, I don't think you can say except the last two drives.
Oh, no, I'm not discounting. In fact, I kind of said that it doesn't make it any better there in that situation. I'm just pointing out that the previous – you know, the play up until that point was good, you know, good enough, you know, and what happened on those final two possessions of the Bengals, no, that shouldn't happen. But to say that the defensive line play against the run was not, you know, above the line, I guess you'd say, up until that point. Now, yeah, they had some yardage in there, but that wasn't, you know, it wasn't killing us. What was killing us was, as you put it, was the kind of short passes there. They weren't going to beat us by grinding out the ball all damn game like that. You knew at some point they were going to have to beat us with the pass. But, yeah, I mean, we've seen the run defense struggle at times. The middle linebacker play was okay. It wasn't great. yesterday. But on the flip side, the Bengals offensive line, you know, they were down to just two healthy tight ends dressed for this game. I even posted on Twitter before the game started, I expected them to use a tackle with an unbalanced line, you know, as an extra tight end. And they did that. They did just that with some effectiveness too. And they ran right at Ziggy Hood and they ran right at Jason Worlds. And you have to have better linebacker play when you have those numbers like that, you know, going forward. So it wasn't awful, but on the flip side, no, you know, I'm sure they're not getting a little praise in the film room this morning either.
Yep. It did feel a little bit, you know, I think the Bengals, the only time I remember them running over the left side until maybe very late in the game was down on the goal line when the Steelers made a good defensive play to make a tackle down there. They were running over the right side. It felt like the kind of first 4 weeks of the season when guys were running over Aaron Smith and Lamar Woodley. As you pointed out, they're two different guys there, but it had that feel as the Bengals went right-handed a lot. Linebackers, you know, I'm not sure defensively who stood out for the Steelers. Troy in the run game, you know, four or five very good tackles. You know, as you said, maybe a lot of guys, not many guys maybe had really bad games. I don't think a lot of guys had really good games. Kiesel maybe was the best on the defensive line. You know, Timmons, a couple plays here and there. Didn't see a lot of Harrison. Drew one or two holding penalties. And you know, William Gay was probably the guy who stands out because of the two two splash plays that he made defensively.
And we're not giving him enough due, I don't think, in his show, too. What a great game he played from beginning to end. The tip ball on the lazy route in the fourth quarter there, the first interception there that Timmons ended up grabbing, that was great. And, you know, he knew Dalton telegraphed that last one that he picked off that he jumped the route on in that one, too. And that was he was playing cover three in that situation as well, and he read that perfectly. Jumped the route. Something that's not really seen by people in that play as well is Jason Worlds is dropping into a zone area of coverage in there, and we'll never know unless Andy Dalton tells us if maybe that little brief little second that Worlds is dropping is a half second later that he's not delivering the ball in that situation there, and that gives Gay time to jump the route there. So, you know, little things like that show up on tape that you don't see the first time through really make a difference. And William Gay, to his credit, too, after the game, they tried to get him to say how happy he was and what a big game coming off the Ravens game that was. But he gave the media absolutely nothing. He was humble as humble could be despite all the criticism that he gets. And I just want to go on record. I've always been a fairly decent Gay supporter. He has his moments, as does every corner in the NFL. They're really under scrutiny in certain situations, that's for sure. And Gay has had his share of it, but today should be the day that we're all, you know, thankful for the game that William Gay had, because he certainly had he certainly deserved the game ball for his play in that game.
Yeah, and we had a Bryant McFadden sighting. He made another special teams tackle this week and got to hold the ball on a kickoff when the wind was blowing it around. Cortez Allen made a nice play on the offensive side of the ball. You know, Antonio Brown, as we've talked about, continues to emerge. You know, Dave, I think there are real questions. You read to me before we got on air what Mike Tomlin said when asked about Hines Ward. I'm guessing he probably didn't play more than 30% of the snaps offensively, which might be the first time in his career, if the excuse is it wasn't an injury, which it may be an injury, but Tomlin discounted that and just said it was a personnel grouping against how they wanted to attack the Bengals. We saw some three tight end sets. We saw some two tight end sets. The rest of the personnel was pretty much as we would expect in the Steelers to run. But where do the Steelers go from here as Manny Sanders comes back with this team? We've seen Cotterill contribute a little bit. He's still most likely going to be the fifth guy. But, you know, I'm not dismissing Hines Ward. But it's clear to me that at best he is the third best receiver on this team. Now, he does bring some different values on the field. But does Hines Ward get the, you know, does he get 50% of the snaps in most games going forward, or is that going to maybe change a little bit?
I think it's going to depend on situation, time in the game, and what they're trying to do. You know, he's not healthy right now, David. I that's one thing I want to get out there. The guy is not healthy right now. So he's got the bye week to get better. Will he be a starter as far as depth chart listing? Hey, you know, out of respect, yeah, probably. Will his snaps continue to decrease? I think so. You say maybe third best receiver. If you add Heath Miller in there and all like that, he might be even further down the line than that right now. He still makes good play. I mean, let's look back at the Tennessee game a few weeks ago. That was vintage Hines Ward. Does he still have games in him like that? Absolutely, he does. You know, another thing that they might be thinking is let's try to keep him as fresh as we can, too. The guy's no spring chicken. He runs with a little bit of hitch when he's 100% healthy. So is it a demise and him being on his way out? It very well could be. This could be it. This could be the last season for Hines Ward, and it certainly is shaping up with that the way the receiving ranks are coming together here, especially with Jericho Cotri coming on as well. So it's going to be something to monitor. And, you know, we have those participation charts up every week about Wednesday or Thursday. So I advise all of our listeners to kind of check in and check his snap count going forward.
Yeah, that's really good stuff. Dave, obviously you touched on at the beginning the Ravens loss. I got to watch all of that game. Right out of the chute, they're down 10-0. They look like a different team. I give Seattle secondary a ton of credit. They're a little bit of a talented bunch. I mean, I know we beat them 20-0, and people generally dismiss Seattle. But Tavares Jackson played a decent game, and Cam Chancellor and the rest of the Seattle secondary was very good. And, you know, the Ravens didn't get it done, and Jim Harbaugh, you know, just said John Harbaugh said just that we weren't good. Puts the Steelers in the driver's seat, and we now, with the Castle news, with the Schaub news, the Steelers, in my money, have to be even money at least to maybe be the number one seed here. I don't see them, if they play well, I don't see them losing more than one game the rest of the way. Obviously, the one in San Francisco is the one that you would point to if you had to pick one. But just as Ben said after the game, I thought he was right on. He said, look, we did enough offensively, we did enough defensively to win this game. But I still think there's room to grow. And I think that is exactly the right way to characterize this game and this season so far. I don't think the Steelers have put together 60 good minutes of football yet. I thought we were going to see it yesterday. They certainly played as well as you could play the first 15 minutes, and they played pretty well the last 20 minutes. But there's room for this team to continue to improve, and I think they're as talented as anybody in the AFC, and that makes them a dangerous team.
Yeah, and with the Ravens, does that count as two Super Bowl hangovers for them in one season right now?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because let's face it, they've been concentrating so damn hard on the Steelers that they haven't looked good elsewhere. And this is a team that we ain't got as many questions right now as they have, and they've beat us twice this year. So, yeah, the schedule shakes out good. I tell you, a game that's going to be fun to watch, too, is that 49ers-Ravens game. I think that's Thanksgiving night as well. So, you know, the Steelers can learn a lot from that game, going forward as well, too. And I'm with you that the 49ers game, and of course the next one with the Bengals are the two that are circled on the calendar right now. If they lose any other game other than that, you know, they deserve what they get at that point. There's no room for letdowns, and I don't think they will have one.
Yep, I'm with you. Anything else we want to touch on before we get it? We just want to let our listeners know, obviously it's a bye week. And we're going to try to get some guests on Wednesday and Friday. We'll certainly on Friday do our picks for the week. But we'll probably be a little less Steeler-focused the rest of this week. Maybe spend some time talking about what's been going on around the league through the first 10 weeks. We haven't spent a lot of time doing that, and we'll probably do a fair bit of that on Wednesday and Friday of this week.
Yeah, and I think Jeff Reed is back in town, so I want to warn everybody that. He was at the Penguins game the other night, and his buddy left on a flatboard. So after acting, I guess, like a jackass standing up on the seat. So if you're near his sheets, make sure you tell everybody to look out, okay?
All right. Well, as always, thanks for listening. Follow Dave on Twitter, @SteelersDepot. You can follow me, @HammerSpeaks. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast.
Yeah, @TerriblePodcast on Twitter. And email us theterriblepodcast@gmail.com.
Absolutely. And we'll be back at you on Wednesday. Thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.